you might not need it when you need it at 19. Like, I didn't need that when I was 19. I didn't need that when I was 25. And even, you know, during the issues I had with my father throughout my fight career. But that's why what I need now was not what I needed then. And that's when I knew it was time to retire. I wasn't feeling the same. I didn't have the same anger. I didn't have the same drive.
That is Jessica Eye, who retired from MMA in 2022. That was after 17 years of fighting in the UFC and lesser levels of the sport. And Jessica's had plenty of roadblocks in her life. She was hit by a drunk driver at the age of 16, broke her back, and those injuries that she sustained would have halted lesser athletes and individuals. Plus the abuse that she took from her father, where at age 14, it resulted in him being arrested and charged with child endangerment and domestic abuse. She also profiled part of that situation in a Players Tribune piece back in 2019. But I persevered, and now she is walking a new path, channeling her fighting and training energy into her retirement. We sat down a few days ago for a chat. Here's my conversation with Jessica Eye. Jess, so great to have you on. How are you doing, first and foremost?
Well, you know, I think that we all can say, you know, I'm very happy. I mean, I'm happily retired, and, you know, happiness is a day-to-day thing. And today I'm extra happy because I'm talking with you.
Oh, you are so sweet about that. In general, let's take us to the point where you, you know, the factors that went into you just retiring, first and foremost, from the sport.
Yeah, you know, I started fighting when I was 19 years old back. You know, my first fight was at the Nautica Pavilion the Jacobs Pavilion.
Yeah.
You know, June 7th of 2008, you know, and I retired in, you know, 2022. And that was just a long time. You know, I was so fortunate to have, you know, an incredible career, but I felt like it just had served its time. I was ready to try new things in the world.
Was it the compilation of injuries that kind of led you to that point? Or was it just maybe emotional exhaustion from being up for so many bouts and the emotional roller coaster that sport is?
Gosh, you know, I think it's all of it, John. You know, I think it really, when it boils down to it, it was a plethora of those, you know, those things. I, you know, it had some bad health issues for, you know, a couple years there. And, you know, on top of a couple injuries that pulled me out of fights and, you know, it just made me realize that, you know, there's so much going into a mixed martial arts fight. I mean, it's just like even a football game, like you're actually impacting, you know, pain and force on somebody. And, you know, my body definitely wasn't handling that as much like it did when I was in my early 20s. You know, I retired going into my 36th birthday, you know, and starting at 19, it's like, you know, it just seemed like the right thing to do, you know, and there's other parts of the world that I want to travel to. You know, I obviously would love to be a mom. I'm excited to do coaching.
Well, you're now involved. You had a great history with Strong Style, and we could unpack some of that. You're with them. You train. They were a big part of your development. Take me back to how they impacted you in the early years of Jessica Eye as an MMA fighter.
Oh my goodness. Like without Strong Style, you know, Stipe, you know, Miocic, you know, the heavyweight contender and also, you know, the longtime heavyweight champ of Cleveland, yeah. Longtime teammate and friend, you know, we both came to Strong Style with, you know, these images of what we wanted to do and a place to do it in. You know, at the time, mixed martial arts was still so small. So we had found others like us, you know, that, you know, believed that this sport was going to grow and that it was going to turn into something absolutely amazing. And, you know, we all believed in one another and supported each other. And, you know, without us group of individuals first together, I don't know that, you know, we would have been able to make it as far as we did. You know, Stipe and I both being from Cleveland or the surrounding areas for to do something so big on such a national level when there was such a minimal amount of people doing it then just showed that the right people came together at the right time to do, you know, something really great together.
Well, I can still remember going to some of your training sessions, or at least even some of your cardio sessions, to talk to you and or Stipe. And you guys did have that. It was kind of like Cleveland, us against the world in many ways. Am I accurate in saying that?
Yeah, I think that's just the Cleveland mentality, you know, and, you know, every dog has their day sometime. And I think that we're just in that position where it's, you know, the dog days are like the dog, the good dog days are ahead of us. And that, you know, and you're seeing Cleveland sports, you know, Cleveland and the city in general, just really doing some beautiful things. And, you know, to see where it was 10 years ago till now is just, it's so exciting. And I feel slightly like I hope that, you know, I mean, especially being the only female to ever fight in the UFC, not only just from Cleveland, but from Ohio in general.
Yeah, you really did blaze some trails there. And I want to get back to kind of the origins of it. You shared with me in a previous interview about, you know, that car accident, you getting, you know, the whole thing that went down when you were a youngster, 14 years of age. And you even say that, how extensive were the injuries? And then number two, how did that impact you becoming an MMA fighter? Because you do say they're connected. You can connect the dots, right?
Well, yeah, I believe that just at, you know, and the accident happened when I was 16. I just gotten my license.
16. Gotcha.
It was crazy because, I mean, we think about kids, like, the worst thing ever is their child to get them a car and then them break down and something bad happen. And, you know, unfortunately, that was the circumstance with us. We were on a old country road. But, you know, what in result, it was my back being broken, some other minor injuries. But really, ultimately, my, you know, T3 and T4 of my back, which is, you know, what can cause you to be paralyzed. And, you know, there was that recovery from that injury and just being away from high school, being away from my friends, being away from sports, that, you know, I really just created this unbelievable sense of, like, I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to do something great. And I'm a really good athlete. And this was an injury that could have stopped me from even being able to walk. Like, let's take it to the highest level we can. And, you know, little did I know that not only fighting for the ability to walk again, fighting for the ability to recover from, you know, the trauma of being hit by a drunk driver to all of that, you know, it's just like that, not only emotional fighter mentality, but the real life fighter mentality in that way. So it's kind of interesting how they went hand in hand together.
They seem to, but you still had a long recovery period. How difficult was that? And then let's get into the point where you actually got in contact with people in the sport and got you out on a mat and eventually into the octagon.
Yeah. So, you know, I was a sophomore in high school. It was December when the accident happened, but I spent the whole rest of my year not really getting to return fully to school until the very next year, which was my junior year, which is, you know, we think about our friends' children or maybe even our own children that are in high school. Like, these are such big years and development years, you know, and I was just very fortunate. I had an amazing doctor at Children's Hospital that helped me, that, you know, just put us on the best possible course of recovery. And, you know, when I was given the green light to be able to start running is when I went back to track, and I was able to actually that year do track, just running, no impact, no heavy, you know, pressure to my chest, but I could run. So I just started running and started doing any type of physical all body movement. Cause, you know, running takes all the muscles, you know, in that part. And, I think you've been doing some marathons, right? And some triathlon stuff. So it's a workout in its own, but it was just, you know, that mentality of like, you know, hey, I have the ability to walk again. You know, I'm going to run. I know I can walk, but I'm going to run because I can. And, you know, it feels good to do that. And from that, I graduated high school at Rootstown High School, which is in Portage County. And I graduated, and that following year is when I got introduced to the sport of mixed martial arts. And I met Marcus, I met the entire team, and, you know, they were like, wait a minute, you want to fight? You really want to do this? And I'm like, yeah, there's not very many girls doing it. I'm super tough. I've been through so many life things that, you know, actually professional fighting, you know, mirrors the personality that I have. And that's the internal fighter that I am, just for a good cause. You know, it was never about hurting others. It was about, you know, getting into the octagon, having a safe place or a safe gym to be able to, you know, get rid of some of my trauma or get rid of some of these bad feelings I had, or even just find others like me that, you know, it's like finding a book club, or it's like finding, you know, a cycle club. Like, we were just a beautiful bike team that created something, you know, together.
So I'm going to play little amateur psychologist here with you. You picked something, you certainly could have picked a sport that was much less stress on the body, on the psyche, but you not only pick a sport that is so physically demanding and ultimately can give you many injuries, which you've dealt with over your career. Is that the reason why you did it? I mean, let me get into something that really will test me to the greatest ability of what I'm capable of doing.
Yeah, I think that again, it, you know, I came from a very traumatic childhood. You know, there was a lot of heavy abuse. And I think that one of the things that, you know, ultimately at such a young age, I really didn't understand it. And it again goes down to that retirement, who I was at 19 years old when I was fighting and I was so angry and I wanted somebody else to hurt or feel hurt like I did. You know, I wanted a safe place to be able to do that. You know, and I found out, I'm like, wait a minute, there's fighters in the world. Like, you can be a fighter. And I'm like, wait a minute, if I can channel all of those, you know, emotional things that happened to me, my dad was a very large man. So I'm like, well, hey, if I can survive the hand of my father and that way I can survive the hand of a woman. And it really inspired me to be like, you know what, there's other women like me in the world that have either been traumatized by mother, father, uncle, somebody, somewhere, something, somehow. And, you know, sometimes rage is a part of that trauma, you know, and going and punching the heavy bag actually feels good. It actually is a safe place to go channel your emotions, and staying away from drugs, alcohol, you know, or other people that could possibly put, you know, bring out those traumas more in you. So I was so fortunate to find that, you know, within myself, and find such a safe place, you know, that drugs and alcohol, or, you know, going maybe another path could have, you know, been something that happened to me. I mean, there was a very crucial time, you know, in my childhood, in my young adulthood, that was like, you know, hey, Jess, what are we going to do with all this experience? What are we going to do with all these things you went through as a young girl? How, what kind of woman are you going to choose to be? Because ultimately, our past experiences are just our past experiences. They're not who we choose to be. Who we choose to be is our decision, you know, and how we decide to look at it. And, you know, I've spent a lot of healing time since retiring. You know, I felt like fighting became my catalyst. I definitely put, you know, a lot of those things on the back burner and spent so much time focusing on my athletic career. That, you know, I stopped myself with some own personal development and almost healing at that point. And retirement has allowed me to spend some time on that healing journey of that young, angry girl who came into mixed martial arts and, you know, wanted to prove something. And I did, I proved, I did. I made it to the highest level, you know, with minimal experience outside of a traumatic childhood.
Yeah. How did you, and if I can unpack this a little bit, how did you get from the point of where you were dealing with this abuse that you've spoken about before? So I don't think I'm opening up any avenues that haven't been mentioned. How did you get from that point to where and coming to grips just with reconciling with your father, or how did that all evolve along the lines of still you're trying to be an MMA fighter? It seemed like a real difficult journey for you to unpack what your dad did and then how you move forward as a woman.
I think that, you know, my father is now passed, you know, in, you know, God rest his soul. And I think that he is, you know, in a better place now in that regard. So where I'm at now from 2016, when my father died, till 2023, you know, here we are now. And I forgive my father for what he emotionally was intelligent enough to do. I mean, he was doing his very best of what he thought he could do. I'm not one to hold necessarily grudges. I do like the word accountability. And I feel like my father, his accountabilities happen to him in other ways, but I have to be accountable to myself of how I'm going to handle what happened to me moving forward, right? I'm accountable for my behaviors. I'm accountable for my emotions. I'm accountable for how I make a difference in the world moving forward. And for fighting, it was only fighting was my hyper focus, like just making it through the career. And now that I'm retired a year from it, I've been able to spend more time healing, that I only hope that I can help other athletes, other individuals, you know, that have kind of ran from that, you know, or not even ran from it. You know, fighting was my catalyst. I didn't have to think about it. I didn't have to deal with it. You know, that was my everything. And now that that part of my life is over, I have to look it in the face. And now I've created, you know, Jessica Evil Eye versus Jessica Eye. And they're both tough and they're both super strong and they're both motivated. And, you know, I'm just teaming them up together to help moving forward and help other people in my position. But also to, you know, say it's okay to, you know, ask for some help in that regard. And you might not need it when you need it at 19. Like I didn't need that when I was 19. I didn't need that when I was 25. And even, you know, during the issues I have with my father throughout my fight career. But that's why what I need now was not what I needed then. And that's when I knew it was time to retire. I wasn't feeling the same. I didn't have the same anger. I didn't have the same drive, the same motivation in that way that fighting, you really, you know, I hate to be that one to say it, that I feel like every fighter or boxer has to have a little bit of a screw loose or something happened to make you want to want to be able to handle that, because pretty sure I hit my knee the other day and like I was like, oh my goodness, I couldn't even imagine training on that level anymore now. Like I don't want to be hit. I don't want to take those bruises. Like I don't want to have bruised shins or beat up hands. And you know, yes, I deal with the injuries from it from previously, but thankfully, you know, I have my head, I have my wits, my joints are not completely destroyed. And I have just the ability to spend another 30 years doing something great.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing what you have in storage as your life goes forward, because it was always great to follow your story in the sense that, you know, you were one of the trailblazers. A lot of women have come after you. You're a young woman, you're getting in, you're in Bellator, then you graduate, as it were, to, you know, UFC, to the big show, as it were. Take me back, Jesse, just how much pressure you must have felt being one of those early ones in the fight game on the women's side. And, you know, how did you handle all that? Could not have been easy.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really feel pressure, to be honest. Like, I felt like it was okay. What I was. I felt like I've said this even previously. I feel like I'm the girl who goes through things to show you can get through them. Huh. Right? You get to look at my story or see the way that I handle it. But I never felt pressure in that regard for that. It wasn't until I got to the UFC that later years, the pressure to win a world title, you know, like there was pressure from, you know, seeing Stipe, and not that anybody put on me, but Stipe did it. And I was like, man, I want to do that. And that was what I created. No one created that for me, mm-hmm. but it was more or less, you know, something I wanted to do. But you know, fighting is just a part of my journey. I feel like I'm going to be doing some, you know, much bigger things in the world that, you know, fighting is still just a very narrowed market. That I hope I can really just branch out and, you know, really reach to people on a much bigger scale that has maybe not, you know, anything to do with fighting, just, you know, being a trauma survivor and somebody, you know, from a small town who didn't give up on themselves and, you know, made something great of their life.
What was your greatest moment, best bout that you had, or where you feel you put it all together? And another part of that question is, most of your career, you didn't fight as a flyweight, you were bantamweight. And a lot of people, I'm not Mr. MMA expert here, but a lot of your best work was as a flyweight. So how did you maneuver through all that?
Yeah, so my biggest fight, you know, was when I beat Zoila in Bellator, and, you know, it was 58 seconds. It was a huge point in my career. I was 11-1, you know, I was doing some really big things. And you know, had Bellator not cut their women's division at the time, you know, I would have never ended up going up a weight class. to the UFC, but that's when, you know, Ronda Rousey was, you know, yeah, the big name, and, you know, they were just trying to get girls to be able to fight in a weight class with her. So whatever, she could have been a, you know, a flyweight, which, you know, is, or I'm sorry, flyweight like myself, 125, or a straw weight, you know, or, you know, they were just pulling girls from anywhere. And, you know, there wasn't much for me, much other places for me to go at that point. So when the UFC offered me to come up at bantamweight, you know, I had some success there. And obviously, you know, I had some defeat there. But had I been given the opportunity, you know, when I was 27, to continue on fighting at flyweight, I think that things would have been a little bit different. But, you know, we were in such the early years. I mean, just like we are now, we're seeing young girls, high school wrestling start, you know, where it's going to be starting now in, you know, college girls, you know, wrestling, like what it's going to be in the next 10 years is going to be mind blowing, the changes that are going to happen. So the amount of changes that happen for women's mixed martial arts and how fast it happened, you know, in that regard, you know, I almost wish I was 27 getting into it now instead of being, you know, now 37 and retired. So.
Yeah. If you were 27 there, you've got all these injuries that you've dealt with and, you know, the body's 10 years older at 37, mm-hmm. Boy, a lot of what ifs, per se, but you know, you skirted your way through it. You dealt with it as best that you could. And you had, as you alluded earlier in our interview, the great relationship that you had with Strong Style and with Marcus and everyone. Let's go back into how that was such an intricate part of your prep for the upcoming fights. And then you did have a period where you switched away from them. So what were the mechanics involved in that?
Well, so, you know, Strong Style was amazing. They basically started me from learning just how to throw a punch, you know, and I was so fortunate to have that. And in my time that I ended up, you know, I was with Strong Style for 11 years before I went to Las Vegas to try out the UFC PI because, you know, the UFC Performance Institute, the PI, it's an amazing place. It's, imagine like the Browns training facility, like it's their headquarters. It has everything that you could need. But still, unfortunately, the sport, you know, these individual teams don't have that. And there's a lot of money that comes out of your pocket paying for, you know, say you get hurt, you know, practice and you need some physical therapy. And, you know, the Browns, right, they just go to there and they get it. And they can also pay to go someone separately, but it's provided within their facility. There's, you know, private training areas, you know, that's, the sport is still growing. That still wasn't happening at Strong Style. And, you know, I had broke my back as a child, you know, in that accident, and I've always kind of dealt with it. And it's always been something that needed managed more, you know, and it cost me a lot of money, you know, in that regard to go to a local doctor and to do that. So going to Vegas allowed me the free medical treatment. And, you know, I hope that changes for fighters, you know, later on down the road, that, you know, that we get more of these little satellite training areas that the UFC will put together, and that, you know, people in the Midwest or, you know, wherever can go in that way to be able to have that training so they don't all have to just go to Vegas. But, you know, my very last retirement fight, you know, I came back to Cleveland and I trained with Strong Style. And, you know, again, I had a wonderful training camp. I mean, I should have won that fight. I just went in there, and really at that point, I was just like, I was more excited about my Cabo vacation at the end of the month, you know, than I was to even be in there. And, you know, I make too much money and there's too much risk in it at that point. You know, I was just like, you know what, I find myself not wanting to do this, you know, again anymore. And I was just happy to be reconnected with people I love so much. And, you know, I did move back to Cleveland. I'll probably be here for another year to keep spending some time, and I'm probably end up leaving after this next winter in that way. But I wanted to come spend some time here and be, you know, around the people I love, and, you know, get to spend some time where I'm not just working all the time and training all the time and in the gym, that, you know, it's nice to be able to see the city.
Well, you know, it's like you're retired, but you're not retired in some ways, Jess, because, you know, you were a creature of habit, of routine, and that's what any pro athlete will say if they're a year or two out of out of, you know, training for something. Very difficult to make that transition. And then when you put into it, you mentioned all the things you dealt with, or kind of put them aside while you were fighting and training and going to this appearance or that appearance. It's kind of hard to just get back to the main thing being the main thing. And that is, you know, clean up the emotional situation and get on with my life, because people have looked at you all these years as the MMA fighter. And it's got to be a difficult scenario. Myself, you know, I retired a year and a half ago, and I'm kind of dealing with that as well. But you had that short and really strong career, but then now you're a young woman at 37. What else are you going to do? That's a tough question to answer.
Yeah, you know, I try not to put any pressure on myself. And, you know, one of the things I was, you know, obviously we all know Tom Brady and just the years of, you know, competition and all of that. And I think that all of us think that when somebody as an athlete, you know, even as a spectator, mm-hmm. you know, regular civilian, you know, someone watching a sport, we're like, oh, they retired. It's cool. They're fine. There's a lot more that goes into it. And I can only hope that I have some ideas, my entrepreneurial mindset, that, you know, wanting to create some type of level for any retired NFL, NBA, you know, whatever it is, you know, specifically fighters, because, you know, the NFL has commissions that take care of their people. But again, to be able to allow other athletes to know that it's okay to ask for, like, hey, why do I not feel as good? Like, this thing, I was always doing this. This was always there for me. And again, even for yourself, John, you know, being on the news was, you know, such a big part of your life. And now it's no longer that main part. I mean, it's literally like losing a sub personality of yourself that you create, that you loved so much. And, mm-hmm. you know, there is some separation, you know, and there are some emotions behind that. Even as much as I was super tough and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to be like that. And, you know, 6-7 months later, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like that. Like, what am I doing? You know, I feel a little frozen in myself. And if there's any encouragement I can give to anybody maybe that watches this, is that you have to be okay with the curiosity, and you have to find new interest in that, and, you know, allow yourself to be curious, you know, and not form judgments on yourself, not say, you know, give yourself such high standards as you once did when you were, you know, on the news, or, you know, you were that athlete, that to allow yourself some grace, be curious, and give yourself an opportunity. Like, don't create unreasonable expectations of yourself.
That's a great way to put it. And then I also worry sometimes, you are in such a physical realm, you know, where there's not just contact, to your ankles, your shins, but, you know, the noggin, yeah, right, yeah. Up there. Worry about that? Because you hear so many stories about former football players and fighters. Do you worry about the long-term stuff, Jessica, I, at age 50, maybe dealing with something that isn't apparent right now?
Yeah, you know, my father died of brain cancer, terminal 4, you know, GBM, glioblastoma. And yes, oh my goodness, over the past year, you know, the UFC has taken me and got some CAT scans. But yeah, I want to keep diving deeper. You know, there's definitely some behavioral issues that, you know, I would be ignorant to not almost hold myself accountable to say that there isn't some things that have happened. And even again, looking at things like other athletes, CTE, you know, traumatic injuries, that, I mean, even one concussion can cause that, you know, and getting in a motorcycle accident, like, it would be ignorant to me to say that, you know, after all those years of sparring, you know, weekly sparring with men, you know, with men too, there wasn't very many females. You know, I fought 30 women professionally, but we're talking multiple, my training was with men, that, yeah, you know, I'm taking my brain health very seriously. I'm on all the wonderful supplements. I'm doing all my own little, you know, holistic style medicines, sure. And searching about them. I think Aaron Rodgers recently did something too, where he did a spiritually guided mushroom trip, and they have said that mushrooms have been able to help. I'm not really too much into that, but more or less just getting the brain scans done. There's some amazing doctors out there. And look, we live in Cleveland, so the Cleveland Clinic is, yep, one of the places to be. So I'm exhausting all that. You know, I'm doing my very best, and thankfully, you know, I am okay in that regard. Thankfully, you know, there's no major issues in that, in that way with my brain, but they can tell. I mean, CT, you won't know until you're dead, but
yeah. Right now, as we stand at age 37, you feel great, and you're working your way through it. If we can, let's go back a little bit, Jess. Those big fights that you were a part of in the UFC, first, especially when you broke through. What was it like just to be in that octagon with literally the whole sport's attention? It's like Monday night football. It's Sunday night football. It's, you know, it's the Super Bowl all rolled into this one UFC 220, whatever it might have been, the number. What was it like just to be with the whole world watching while you were doing your livelihood?
I'm going to miss that. You know, I'm absolutely going to miss being in the octagon. I mean, you know, when I fought in Mexico City in the first ever Mexico City UFC, there was 52,000 people there, and it was amazing. It was, wow. You know, something, you know, fighting at the Q, you know, I'm never going to forget that. And being able to look around and see everything, like, it was incredible. I love doing that. You know, part of me is like, all right, Jess, so how are we going to keep going in that direction? We still need to get on stage, whether or not it's motivational speaking or, you know, I definitely want to, I'm going to miss that rush of being able to feel like I had, there were so many people in an arena together just for that moment. It feels really good.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I could still remember when, like, you were throwing some verbal sparring stuff out at Joe Rogan, it's just kind of, I could tell that you were soaking it all in because you're part of this big event. You're one of the participants, you're fighting, and the entire world, you know, is watching, and you get caught up in the moment. And yeah, I think that's kind of a cool quality that you possess.
Yeah. I mean, of course, like, it's beautiful. You're never going to get to have those moments again, you know, in certain parts of your life. And if I could have gone back and been a little bit more present, and I appreciate you in saying that, I was undeniably myself, but I almost at times wish I could go back and be more present in the moment and just be more thankful for what I'm experiencing. You know, again, just giving any other athlete or anybody else a moment, like, all we have is this present moment, like, soak it up, enjoy it. You don't know if you're ever going to get it again, and just be excited for yourself, you know. And I was excited every time I got in the octagon, every time.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And I think a lot of people do. We walk through life now, we worry about what happened prior to this moment that we're in right now. And then we start worrying about what's going to happen in the future. Right now, I'm talking to a young woman that was a phenomenal athlete that's making a transition into a new part of her life. I always enjoyed covering you. I'm in the moment with Jessica I, and this is cool. And I think a lot of people do kind of miss the boat in some ways because they're too worried about the past or the future. Let's enjoy the moment. And while I have the moment with you, let's ask about what excites you about working with young women, girls in the sport of wrestling, because they're kind of you a few years back, you know, when you were making your way in a sport that not as many women were involved in.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. I was given the opportunity to coach at Rootstown High School, their first ever girls wrestling team. And yeah, I mean, I didn't have anybody to be there for me that was a female that made it to the highest level that had back, and the fact that I can do that for them and be there for them just excites me, because now the world's different and there's going to be more of me, you know, and there's going to be future me's, you know, there's going to be other girls that are going to do better than me, you know, and come back and, you know, help others. And for me, it's just exciting to, again, the age of 14 to 18 was such a hard, you know, amount of time for me, where I was in high school, the car accident, the abuse, the some of the other things, that I'm very excited to just show them that no matter what's going on, that they can, with their own, you know, emotions, right? You got to survive the time and figure it out, but you can do anything that you want in this world, no matter where you're at. Rootstown, my graduating class had 100 people in it. You know, and I think there's less now. You can do anything that you want in this world if you put your whole heart and your whole mind to it. And, you know, I believe that I don't know that I'll ever not be able to have that mentality, you know, in that regard. I'm always going to have that bigger sense of self, just because you can apply, if you apply yourself, you can be the best at anything you want.
I 100% agree with you to that point. I think you made a great point. Let's wrap things up here and look into the future for your buddy Stipe. You know, he was supposed to, you know, there was supposed to be a fight, and then now, you know, things are kind of on the back burner. Where do you see him going? A couple more years of fighting for Stipe or what?
I don't think a couple more years of fighting. He's done, you know, he's done so much for this sport, and
he really has
for Cleveland. And, you know, he deserves his peace. He deserves to let his brain settle. He deserves his body. He have his kids, you know, he's got a beautiful wife, you know, they're successful, you know, in real estate and so many other things. So I really think the John Jones fight is what they're going to hold off to. And I think that's what he should do. Get that big payday, go out there, beat John Jones, you know, just like he beat Francis Ngannou the first time, and just, you know, go out there and live it up and retire on top. He deserves that.
Yeah, he really does. He's been such a great ambassador for the sport. You've been a trailblazer, and it's been so cool to see, you know, Cleveland kids, if you will, you know, yeah. Cleveland's own, Jessica Evil Eye, and of course, Stipe Miocic, right there at the forefront of their respective sports, men's MMA and women's as well. And it's just been really cool. So I can't thank you enough for the interview. And we've always kept in touch over the years, and you've always been great to me, and I do appreciate it. And maybe one day we'll go for a run together, if that's cool with you.
Love that. Let's make sure when it's maybe a little warmer, but yeah, definitely up for that.
I'm all for that. All right, Jesse, thanks very much. You have a great day. Thanks very much for being so candid with me, Jessica. I very much appreciate the hard work and the amazing dedication that you had as you put into your sport. And remember, folks, if you enjoyed this conversation with Jessica, if you like the podcast, kindly hit that subscribe and or follow button, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and best of all, share it. And I want to shout out the folks at Strong Style, that whole culture that helped develop the great skills and abilities of Jessica I. Anybody who is, of course, trained there, or if you have supported Jess in any of her fights, well, support us here on the podcast by sharing it if possible. And thanks very much to you guys for listening each and every week. And I look forward to checking in with you next week on the next edition of Telich Talks. Have a great day.